Well, good morning, everybody. I was absolutely delighted to be invited to come and speak at your meeting today, and actually for two reasons. And the first of those is it allows me a chance to convey really quite a personal message of thanks to the Game Conservancies. I'm afraid, Theresa, I grew up in the 70s thinking of the organisation, and to Dick Potts in particular. I'm sure many of you, when you look back over how your life sort of circumstances have unfolded, you'll think of times in your childhood of, you know, particular moments that had a particular influence on events, on the choices you made, and so on. And for me, I'm often, when I do reflect in that way, three stand out for me. The first of those wasn't a choice I made, but it was a friend of my mum who joined me up to the Young Ornithologist Club, the RSPB. That had a huge effect, as you can see. The second was the school that I went to and the wonderful educational opportunities I was provided with. But the third was actually at a point when I was having to make decisions about my A-levels. I can't remember if it was a colour television at the time, probably not, but there was a natural history documentary on the TV, probably BBC Two had just come in, with Dick Potts and the work on the grey partridge. And this really brought to life for me how biology, zoology and ecology can play a part in conservation. I'd already starting to get the sense that I wanted to play a role in nature conservation. And I have to say, starting to understand how you could piece together the life history, as a very dear tutor I had, Nick Davis, who worked with John Krebs, said, you know, essentially modern day ecology is natural history with graphs. But essentially it was showing me how you can put the graphs with this natural history love that I was already developing. And so I must say, I just formally would like to, if I may, just indulge a moment to say it's a great pleasure to be here with the GWCT and for me to acknowledge the very seminal role that Dick and you had, obviously not just influencing me, but the role that the organisation played at a time that was really quite critical in terms of recognising change that was going on in the landscape. So that's one reason why I was really pleased to have the chance to come and speak to you, and thank you. The second one was also I felt this was a chance perhaps to enable us to have a bit deeper understanding of perspectives. I think often we all get caught up in the day-to-day polemics and all the other arguments that go on, and I think this, I hope, is a chance for me to perhaps give, I hope, some insights into my organisation, my charity, and how we approach things. Now, Theresa asked me if I would talk on the topic of the value of shooting to conservation, to nature conservation. And this is, of course, the responsibility of the shooting community to answer. But it does seem to me that I can perhaps offer you some perspectives in answering that question, and indeed we've just heard from Adam, who has been offering some very comprehensive observations from your own perspectives. And I think in doing so, you know, it might be helpful, and I forgive me if this is reminding you of the blindingly obvious, but I think I should just state this. As a charity, RSPB, first of all, our charitable objects are the conservation of biological diversity, of nature, the variety of life, and with it, raising awareness and education of the public, broadly our charitable objects. And the point that I wanted to just remind you of, if I may, is that in doing so, we are neutral on the, if you like, the ethical issues attached to particular activities, to game shooting, to game matters in the round. And the question is more how that might impact on our charitable objects. And so that's really what I thought I could perhaps offer is a perspective coming from that. But you need to understand that because, quite rightly, that may be a different perspective. It might not be, but it might be a different perspective from where you start. And it's important to understand that. So this is really, I think, an attempt to look at the reflections from the RSPB to that question, And as I say, huge pleasure for me to have the chance to do that today and acknowledge the role of one of my heroes when I was growing up. So I felt really I could perhaps offer two combined bits of perspective, if you like, on answering that question. And indeed, you know, this is very much from the perspective of how responsibly does one address the point. From a point of view of charity, trustees actually have a duty to be able to answer questions like this. So I'm essentially thinking about, from my charity's point of view, how do we address the kind of question of our contribution and impact? How does that translate into the question of game conservation and biodiversity? So really I want to look at two aspects. One is, well, what do we mean by nature conservation? What are the goals of nature conservation? And Teresa earlier mentioned some of, or referred back to the journey that nature conservation has been on over 150 years and also touched on some of the values. And I think it's important to do that, and I'll bring that out. And that then also, how might we ask the question around the value? And I think probably the most useful way I can offer on that is indeed the test that the Charity Commission requires all charities to ask of itself in terms of the public benefit that it discharges. So starting with the first of those, essentially these days, what is the goal of nature conservation as seen through the lens of the RSPB? And again, if I start from a personal point of view, going back to the moment I was joined up as a member of the RSPB, since then, since the time I've been a member of the RSPB, the total number of wild birds in the UK has reduced by 44 million. 44 million individual birds have reduced. And that is a pattern that is repeated not just in this country, but across Europe. And indeed, if you just take the farmed landscape, which of course is a very large part of the total landscape of Europe, we see a very large common pattern to what I've just described. This isn't just about birds or any individual species. It's much more extensive than that. Over a very long period of time, the seed bank of wildflowers in this country has been diminishing by about 1% per year. In the last 80 years, the estimates are that we've seen a 76% reduction in the species that provide main feeding opportunities for bumblebees, and particularly bumblebees, but other nectar feeding species. And as I know you all know, goes back to the work Dick Potts and others were involved with, we've seen very major reductions in the total amount of invertebrates and species. 62% of invertebrates have been in decline in the last 40 years, and that pattern's repeated in beetles. Again, a group that I know has been subject to research for GWCT, 70% reduction in carabid beetles. Now, the point I want to move on to this, and it has a point in the journey that I'm describing personally, but I think also for nature conservation in terms of science as well, is that this is a much bigger picture. It's systemic. It's structural. The State of Nature report that was brought together just last year by about 25 different organisations attempting to bring together the best understanding we currently have of what is happening to biodiversity in the UK demonstrates this. It demonstrates it's not just an individual species story, it's a collective story. Effectively, we have a systemic problem in which we are dismantling food webs. This is something that is seen both in terrestrial and aquatic environments. There's been quite an interesting report just come out very recently bringing together a very large number of studies globally on the oceans, which shows in the last 40 years we've seen a 67% reduction in large predatory species and 130% increase in smaller prey populations of fish. We're fishing down through the food chain. And the point on both terrestrial and aquatic environments is that the loss of apex predators is a cause for concern because, generally speaking, these are species that are longer lived and have ability to withstand short-term environmental fluctuations more. So there's a whole question of ecosystem resilience. Other structural aspects of the concern that I'm painting here is one, and I think it was mentioned, I think, by Philip Merricks a bit earlier, is this pattern, quite rightly, of the homogenisation that is going on in the managed environment. Forestry, agriculture in particular, we are seeing a simplification of landscapes and habitats. And one of the things that goes with that is a rise in generalist species that are capable of being successful within those more simple landscapes. And indeed, many of the niches that more specialised species depend upon are being lost. And again, that is a pattern that is very widespread globally. So this really is starting to paint out, in terms of purpose, what is the purpose of your charity? What are you there to do in terms of having impact? Some of the concern that is a driver for looking to take action. From the perspective of RSPB, and when I say this, I'd say one that I think is shared globally and domestically by a large number of nature conservation organisations. First of all, we have to recognise that nature is connected. So from a perspective of RSPB, birds are an integral part of food webs. The solutions that are needed for any one part of that food web, birds, beetles, whatever you choose, actually require solutions for nature as a whole. We have and share an overall goal that by 2020, we wish to see the loss of biodiversity arrested. This isn't just an idle thought. This is one that is shared globally through United Nations processes by governments and civil society across the world. We wish to see the targets that have been set out globally achieved in that kind of time frame. And just to be clear, this is about seeking a world richer in nature. We're not about, in a sense, what we're looking at is how we're about upgrading food webs and improving natural processes, not degrading them. And that is part of this: how do we find solutions, is how do you build rather than simplify and reduce down and take away. And I think I would even go as far as saying, first of all, we should just note we are a long way from revival right now. But there is a restoration agenda building. And again, that is one that is really being reflected across much of the nature conservation movement in the UK right now. And with that, and Theresa mentioned this earlier, there are. It's important to recognise that nature conservation and indeed charitable activity of any sort is ultimately about public, is about societal values. And there are values here. And one of the values is that nature has an intrinsic value in its own right. So this is an intrinsic value, not just an inconvenience, but actually many people believe that it has an intrinsic value in its own right. And indeed, Aldo Leopold, who I have to say of several American nature conservationists is one I have a great deal of admiration as a leading figure in the last century, Aldo Leopold was very quick to make the point that the case for nature conservation goes beyond the utilitarian view. And that actually, and he talked about a land ethic, absolutely, it's in the business of ethical values. And so, part of the proposition is that part of civil society, a civilised society, is living in harmony with nature. This is something... This is something, as I say, that I think I've got a timer on this one. This is something, as I say, that is a set of societal values. It's quite clear, even if you don't subscribe to those particular views, that there is a value in terms of all of us depending on the life support systems that biodiversity and ecosystem services, ecosystem processes bring. But a point I would make to you is the kind of values I'm outlining are a universal set of values. RSPB is part of a global partnership of 120 countries of bottom-up civil society organisations across every major continent, every major culture, and indeed gender, that all recognise that set of values I'm outlining. So that sets some of the context in terms of What is the purpose of nature conservation? What are its goals? Let me move on now to the tests that the Charity Commission asks, encourages, but indeed asks all charities to consider of itself. And the first of those is, what is the purpose of the activity? Well, the first point I'd like to make is that these days, I think we, again, as Teresa said, we've long moved away, you know, beyond the idea of preservation. This is about coexistence. There's a global context to nature conservation now. Really, pretty much since 1993, you know, that is a very settled perspective across the world. And there's actually, in terms of that broader agenda of sustainability, and again, some of these challenges were mentioned earlier in this morning, there's a combined need in terms of both biodiversity and human existence. It is about how we continue to exist together with nature, because without that, we're not going to survive on the planet in terms of being dealing with the challenges that are facing us. And in terms of everything I've been describing, in terms of the state of nature right now, it is clear that challenge is going to grow even bigger going forward. I've put this slide up just briefly, but I wanted to put it up because this was actually one that was put to my trustee board by Professor Sir Bob Watson, who not only most recently has been government chief scientist in DEFRA, but has had a distinguished global career in the World Bank, in Washington, in the President's Office, and of course in the United Nations in terms of the Millennium Ecosystem Assessment and the current programmes on biodiversity and ecosystem services. And the point is, if we are to make a contribution to nature conservation, we have to be addressing the source, the causes of biodiversity loss. And Bob was encouraging us to think about that in terms of the charitable activity that we undertake. And I'm pleased to say that is exactly, from RSPB's perspective, what we seek to do. But I would put to you, this is the global consensus on what nature conservation has to address, because what I've got here are the four major drivers of reality on the ground in terms of what happens to nature. And let me just run through these. This is essentially the biological prism in terms of what are the public harms that we as a charity should be having impact on if we are to have public benefit. And that, I would put to you, is true of any nature conservation charity. First of those, top left, and this is in order. These are sometimes called the horsemen of the apocalypse, and I kind of think this is the kind of running odds at the moment. So the most immediate and biggest driver of biodiversity loss at the moment continues to be habitat loss, particularly through agriculture and forestry and deforestation. This is at a global picture. The second of those is then is invasive non-native species. And I just want to put into context my perspective on a bit of the earlier discussion, because you need to stand back and look at this. When we talk about non-native species and invasive species, you know, we are in an era of hypermobility in terms of how biological material can be moved around the planet. And for some while now, ecologists have been talking about a mass extinction event. And what are the causes driving that? Well, this is what I'm touching on. Well, one of those is invasive species. But this is, in terms of what are the major ones to be concerned about, it would be disease. I've just come back from Belfast, where the forestry around our office is being taken down because of Phytophthora. Aquatic systems, all kinds of invasive species move fast through aquatic systems. Yes, there are some vertebrates that have an effect, particularly on isolated locations. Rats and cats and mice have been all factors globally in the oceanic region, in the Pacific region, in the oceanic islands. Those have been major causes of extinction, invasive species. Third one is pollution, particularly greenhouse gases. But I talk about that in those contexts because ocean acidification, and who knows, the effects on much elevated levels of carbon dioxide are also major impacts, as well as what's happening to the atmospheric physics and the climate of the world. And the fourth major driver of biodiversity loss is overexploitation. Whether that's wild catch fisheries or whether it's hunting and trapping on very large scales and the growing scale, for example, that we're seeing in the Mediterranean and some parts of Africa at the moment, for example. The point is, these are the public harms that our public benefit and the impact we have as a charity needs to address. Second perspective that I might give on these tests that we are all encouraged to think about is, how is the activity beneficial? Now, let me just say, I have to look at this from the perspective in terms of how is shooting beneficial, essentially as a land use. This is the lens through which we would look at them as we would any other land use or economic or social activity. First thing I just want to make an observation on is that the level of activity of shooting in this country is significantly high. It's relatively high, and certainly I think it's right to regard it as a significant land use in this context. This is from the James Hutton Institute, but essentially this is giving an idea of the density, the intensity of game birds that are shot per unit area. And just to, in a sense, the numbers doesn't matter. The observation I'd make to you is this is a particularly significant activity in the UK, the top there, compared to the European average, or indeed the average in the United States. Second thing would be then, what are some of the, going back to the analysis I was offering you earlier about the state of nature, what is the impact of the activity from a biological perspective? Well, I think I'd make an observation to you that we are seeing a continuing increase in the number of particularly this is red-legged partridge and pheasants, birds being released each year. You know, this is a neutral statement, but this is a supernormal density of an introduced non-native species, or two non-native species. You know, there are a set of questions around this that I would put to you are part of asking that impact and benefit test. And again, in a way, the numbers don't matter here too much, but I did want to just convey the scale, the relative scale of what is this intervention into the ecosystem each year. The column nearest me is a rough figure, well, it's more than rough, but it's a approximate figure of the biomass of native adult breeding birds in the UK. And then the figures to the left there are the biomass that is being introduced each year of on release and then just prior to the shooting season opening. The point is, this is a very significant intervention into the environment. And I think I have to also make the point that as well as the intervention in terms of biomass, there's also, as we've heard, the legal control of predators and disease vectors. Sadly, from the perspective of RSPB and our experience, there continues to be illegal control of predators as well. There is also, of course, an immense, with all of that intensity of activity taking place, there's an immense amount of other activity happening. Going back, to, as we heard earlier, back to that research in the 1970s in terms of what can be done to improve conditions for other aspects of biodiversity. The classic work on beetle banks and so on, a good example of that. And indeed, right now, I'm very pleased that we're working with GWCT on looking at how more action can be taken for lapwing as another ground nesting waders. Come back to ground nesting birds. Come back to that in a moment. Anyway, that's in terms of thinking about the activity. How might you think about that activity? The third question then is, how public is the benefit? And again, I can offer, and this is particularly beyond we're encouraged to think about how we as a charity create a broader benefit to the public incidental to any particular activity that might be happening. And I think I'd offer, again, a couple of observations here. The first is, I offered you the thought that there were perhaps, as they're sometimes called, the four horsemen of the apocalypse in terms of the drivers of biodiversity loss. I'm firmly of the view that I think we've now got a fifth one coming up on the rails, and that is the disconnection that modern society, people have with nature. I've seen some nods around the room already, so I'll be brief, but you know, this is a point worth making. We are seeing major changes. You know, globally, more than half the world's population is now urbanised. In this country, in the last 30 years, more than the time I've been an adult, we've seen a reduction of 75% in the number of children who play outdoors. And I think I'd be quick to say this isn't simply because they're all on their screens and on their mobile phones. It's not because the youth of today are any different in their inherent nature than when we were kids. It's actually a whole widespread set of factors around social attitudes. But clearly, creating a generation that has less understanding about the natural world and less empathy and connection, when their future is going to depend on that natural world more than ever, is something of deep concern. The other part of it as well, though, is also how we can recognise, and you know, the point's been made, and it really goes beyond the brief that I feel I can talk to, but clearly shooting is an integral part of communities. We were very pleased with Askham Rig earlier this year to celebrate the award of the Heritage Lottery Fund's Best Education Award for our Skydancer project. And there's clearly a role in terms of celebrating how game shooting can play a part in local communities. And we had some of the next generation of gamekeepers there with us celebrating a rather glitzy event, which I have to say, probably for gamekeepers too, is the only time you tend to see RSPB staff in posh frocks and so on. The final test, just to finish on, then, is how is the purpose furthered? And again, the Charity Commission encourage all of us to consider about, is our response proportionate to the objects of the charity? And as we heard earlier, this is all about, you know, what tools you've got in the toolkit. I think what I'd say to you is I think the car repair job's got a hell of a lot bigger than it was when I started out going into conservation. I was lucky enough to go on to Oxford and be an undergraduate in awe of the Edward Grey Institute of Field Ornithology. I did work with the National Vegetation Classification, Geological Survey, and also Soil Survey of England and Wales. And my observation is, you know, the days of simply looking at through one lens and one tool has moved on a long way. We need to think about the evidence base to conservation. Yes, there are a set of social and societal values involved, but absolutely the important approach that certainly we would recognise, and I think to have legitimacy anyone in debate, anyone needs to recognise, is the importance of evidence-based approach to conservation. What is the state of nature? What are the pressures? And what sort of response? And as we go back to the encouragement of Sir Bob Watson, our response now has to be much more integrated than it was. And frankly, and I say this having thinking back to my days, a lot of Volterra equations and predator prey, you know, simply looking through the lens, a lens in terms of a predator prey interaction is grossly oversimplistic. We have to look at multiple factors in complex problems. And so I would certainly hope, looking forward, in terms of thinking about how shooting can be of value to nature conservation as a whole, that we can look forward to looking at problem solving and looking at those issues in a much more sophisticated way than I think often we keep ourselves in a rather crude debate, and there's a much more sophisticated one that needs to be had. And I think I'd also offer the observation that maybe respects that the bigger picture requires respect of different perspectives, because wherever you start from, I'd like to suggest to you there are other perspectives that build on that in terms of the scale of the challenge we face and the scale of solutions we need. It's quite clear that the global challenge here is too big, not just for any one charity or organisation, but any one sector, and we have to be working together if we are going to coexist on the planet. And a final thought on that is looking ahead, some of the challenges that are still so clearly illustrated in this country, the BTO Irish Wild BTO Scottish Ornithologists Club and Birdwatch Ireland's great undertaking, the new Atlas, has shown a 43% reduction in the curlew population. We have a very major part, about a quarter of the world's population in the UK and Ireland. This clearly is going to be an area, I'm sure, of further focus. And I hope it's one that we can do so in a way where we are seeking to have collective impact for common cause on this much bigger agenda, which is where nature conservation is today. Thank you very much.